What up, Cavs Nation? I'm your host, Ethan Sands, and I'm back with another episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. We are back with another game recap, and I have none other than Chris Fedor joining me on today's podcast. What's up, Chris?
Ethan, how are you, man?
I'm tired of the Cavs making me nervous down the stretch because this team is back and forth on a consistent basis. I mean, they were down 15 at one point in the first half and then automatically turned it around and then in the fourth quarter allowed a comeback again, and it never really seemed like this game was decided until the very last minutes of the game. And I wanted to look at some of the players that were key contributors in today's win, and I think you got to start with Caris LeVert. We've talked about him being Sixth Man of the Year candidate. We've talked about him being able to facilitate when he's not scoring. But tonight, he basically did everything and more. 23 points, 11 assists, and 8 rebounds. He actually was the second highest rebounder for the Cavs tonight behind Jared Allen's 9 rebounds. And I think that just shows you how much effort he's putting in on both sides of the ball and everything. So what did you get from the locker room for the guys talking about Caris? Because I heard it was a madhouse in there.
It was. So George Niang was talking about Caris, and he basically said that it shouldn't even be a question that Caris is Sixth Man of the Year. And of course, you know, teammates are going to stick up for teammates and they're going to make the pitch for their guy. And I totally expect that to happen. And Donovan Mitchell talked about Caris LeVert and his candidacy recently for Sixth Man of the Year. But as George Niang was making his pitch for Caris and given the reasons behind it, Tristan Thompson basically grabbed the microphone, the Bally Sports microphone, took it upon himself to make his pitch for Caris. And what he said was that voters shouldn't reward guys on the seventh place team in the Western Conference. Obviously, he was hinting at Malik Monk and Tim Hardaway Jr. and some of the other guys that are battling with Caris for Sixth Man of the Year. According to oddsmakers, at this point, Caris is number 4 in Sixth Man of the Year behind Malik Monk, Norman Powell, and Naz Reid, actually, who has moved up a lot for the Timberwolves. But the stance that the Cavs were taking was about, look at the Cavs, we're third place in the Eastern Conference, 43 wins. Compare that to Sacramento and Dallas, and who's making the bigger impact for their team coming off the bench. Not to mention, Caris has only started a handful of games this year, so most of his production, whether it's scoring, distributing, rebounding, defensive end of the floor, has come as a true sixth man because the Cavs have been really, really adamant about trying, if they can, to keep Caris in that particular role to make sure that he's comfortable and they don't yo-yo him between starter bench the way that they did last year. Obviously, tonight was a different circumstance. He was back in the starting lineup. It was out of necessity, but he has been impactful for the Cavs all season long. And tonight, he rescued their offense at a time that Darius Garland didn't have it going. Jared Allen had nothing going. The only one that was actually doing something on the offensive end beyond George Niang in the starting lineup was Marcus Morris Sr. coming off the bench at the time that Caris kind of took over offensively and rescued the team. So I think he's got a strong case. There's no doubt about it. I don't know that he has the best case. I don't know that he is the front runner. I've got to dig more into the stats, and there's plenty of time for that still to get itself worked out at the end of this season. But Caris belongs in that conversation, no question about it.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't like comparing stats between like the main point guard and the de facto point guard or anything like that, but I think you gotta look at this. Like, Darius Garland, who is supposed to be the guy in Donovan Mitchell's absence, had just 13 points and had 7 assists, but he also had 5 turnovers in the game and also kind of struggled down the stretch again, which we've talked about in multiple different podcasts. But Caris LeVert had 11 assists and only had 1 turnover. He's now gone 7 straight games with 7 or more assists. It's just a testament to what he's able to do with the ball in his hand and how he is as a creator. But you mentioned it. Jared Allen wasn't really getting anything going, and I found it really funny. Like, he wasn't getting anything going, he was bobbling passes, but he still only missed 4 shots on the entire game. So That was weird to me.
Many of those were early in the game.
Yeah, and we can get into that a little bit more later, but we have to talk about Marcus Morris Sr. I mean, welcome to the Cavs, buddy. Like, I don't know how else to put it. 4 threes and was able to contribute on the defensive end, was able to grab a couple of rebounds, and I don't know. I looked at the stats afterwards, after the game, but coming into them getting this 10-day contract with Marcus, I was not expecting him to be hoisting from three like he was tonight. Obviously, he does have that in his bag, but Chris, was that something that you came in expecting?
That's one of the reasons why they brought him in here, Ethan. It's one of the things that he does at this point in his career. Stylistically, he's a really good fit for this group that wants to take threes, that wants to play a stretch four next to either Jared Allen or Evan Mobley as this season progresses. Look, George Niang, stretch four. Dean Wade, stretch four. Missing Dean, obviously, allows Marcus to step in there and kind of take on that same role. So yeah, I mean, I did expect him to do this kind of thing. I don't know that I expected him to make four in his debut from the couch to the court. He was chilling in the sun with his kids. He said he was in the gym and he was working out and he was staying in shape as best as he could and trying to be a pro. But there is no simulating game action in the NBA when you're by yourself shooting in a gym. But it was clear that he had done some work to stay as sharp as he possibly could during this lengthy absence. He was great off the bench. And that's the reason why it made sense from a fit standpoint with Morris, beyond the fact that he has the experience, beyond the fact that he has the relationship with JB Bickerstaff that goes back to his rookie year in Houston. His first 2 years with the Rocket were spent with JB Bickerstaff, and that was JB's rookie. He was the developmental coach for Marcus Morris Sr. So that relationship plays a part in Morris being here with the Cavs. But from a fit standpoint on the court, it's this. It's his ability to play the three or the four. It's his ability to switch on the defensive end of the floor, maybe even play some small ball five from time to time, given the matchup. And it's about spacing. It's about gravity that he can bring. It's about the threat of the outside shot. All of those things play a factor in why he was brought here and make it so that he can work in this particular offense with them wanting to play this kind of style.
Yeah, I mean, he's averaged over 35% shooting from three-point range in all but, it looks like, three seasons of his 14-year NBA career. I mean, that's ridiculous. And that's on shooting at least three a game. That's pretty phenomenal when you think about it.
Yeah, and again, he's not going to be Darius Garland, right? He's not going to be Donovan Mitchell. But if he's going to threaten a defense with that three ball and he's going to provide a different element on the offensive end, in the front court, while Evan Mobley is out, even when Evan Mobley is back, he can play alongside Jarrett or he can play alongside Evan. The idea of Marcus Morris Sr. and the skill set that he brings to the table has always made sense for this team, and you saw that tonight with the kind of impact that he made off the bench. I mean, look, this is a team, Ethan, that is missing two of its top four options at the power forward spot, really, in Evan and Dean. And for the Cavs to get 27 points of production between George Niang and Marcus Morris Sr., and not have to use Damian Jones as a four, because that's not his position. That's him being out of position, and that's not maximizing his strengths. I mean, that is huge for this group moving forward. Now, I'm not saying that Morris is going to shoot 5 of 7 every single game or 4 of 5 from three-point range and give them 14 points off the bench, but to be able to go to a guy like that who is capable of that, that's pretty important for this team, given everything that they're missing right now.
Yeah, and he's averaging 4 or more 3-point attempts since the 2016-2017 season.
Yeah, I mean, as his career has progressed, that is obviously a tool that he has added to his belt more and more and more. He is now known as a stretch forward, which is what the Cavs want.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to discuss a little bit about what the Cavs need to fix heading into this next little stretch, especially with the last couple of games coming in the month of March. But before then, become a Cavs insider and interact with me and Chris by subscribing to Subtext. Sign up for a 14-day free trial or visit cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word stop. It's easy, but we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from Chris and me. We'll be right back. All right, Chris, we look at what happened in the beginning of the game, leading to how the Cavs have started pretty slow in the first quarter as of late, only having 25 points in the first quarter, 29 points in the second quarter, and then exploding for 36 in the third. It feels like they've gotten out to a slow start in their last couple of games, and I think the struggling Darius Garland and Jared Allen have been major portions of that. I'm more concerned about Jared Allen's rebounding numbers as of late than his scoring, because obviously he still was able to go 8 of 12 from the field and score 23 points. But Darius Garland was just 5 of 18 with 13 points and 1 of 9 from beyond the arc. So, Chris, which of these two do you think is the most concerning over the last stretch of March?
I'm going to say something that you're probably not going to like and other people probably aren't going to like. I don't think anything is alarming or concerning right now with this team. And I just don't know how anybody judges this team right now. They're missing 4 of their top 10 rotation players. It just doesn't matter how or why at this point. Given everything that they're missing, given everything that they're dealing with, it doesn't matter how or why. It's just about finding a way by any means possible. And they did that tonight. Despite the fact that they got off to a slow start, despite the fact that their offense was stuck in mud, despite the fact that Darius Garland was not good tonight, despite the fact that Jared Allen was fumbling the ball all over the place early on in the game, against a team like Indiana that is the second best offense in the entire NBA, the Cavs found a way, held the Pacers to 103 points, held them to an offensive rating below 110, which is about 10 points per 100 possessions worse than what they usually do on a nightly basis. So as long as they're going to play this kind of defense, it is not going to happen like this every single night. The formula is not going to be the same every single night. It's just about finding a way somehow, some way, showing a mental toughness, showing fortitude, showing resiliency, and weathering all of this stuff that they're dealing with right now. So I just have a hard time overanalyzing this group or making any kind of definitive statements about what's a problem, what's not a problem. If they were full strength and they were playing like this, then I think it would be alarming. But I think given everything that they're dealing with, I think guys are entitled to bad nights. I think teams are entitled to getting off to slow starts. I think a lot of these things that show up at times are very, very explainable. And I think they're very circumstantial.
Well, Chris, you mentioned the guys being able to step up on the defensive end. And to me, I point to a lineup that I don't think we were expecting to see tonight. Or maybe I wasn't expecting to see tonight. But Tristan Thompson and Marcus Morris Sr. on the court together, along with some other defensive personalities, allowed for them to really hunker down during a good majority of this game. And also just having the size of Marcus Morris, as you mentioned, as the stretch position, and then Tristan Thompson asserting his presence and also throwing his weight around, which we know he's great for. What did you think of the two kind of big lineup with Tristan and Marcus Morris?
Well, I think everybody understands that George Niang's not an elite defender, but give him a lot of credit for his defense on Pascal Siakam near the sidelines, where it was originally called a foul. The Cavs challenged it. It got overturned. That was really good defense by George. And he's had moments like that. But we know he's not an elite defender. He's not on this team primarily for that. It's about shooting. It's about offense. It's about spacing the floor. And he does that well. And he's been doing that well, especially since he's gone into the starting lineup and needed to step up more with Evan and Dean both missing at the same time. But it's all to say that when Marcus Morris Sr. is out there instead of George Niang, the Cavs are going to be a different caliber defense. They're going to be a better defense. Marcus Morris Sr., look, he's older now. He's toward the end of his career. But there were times in playoff matchups against the Cavs that he was the guy guarding LeBron. There have been times in the past during his career where he has taken those kinds of assignments and he has held his own. He's got toughness to him. He's got physicality. He's got strength. He plays with an edge. He can move his feet a little bit better than George Niang. He's more switchable than Niang. So it seems like it can give the Cavs a different kind of element on the defensive end of the floor and maybe more of a chance to be successful at that end of the floor. He is a better defender individually and maybe even from a team standpoint than George. And it's not surprising to me that that end of the floor is probably going to look a little bit better when Marcus Morris Sr. is in there getting those minutes as opposed to George. And that's no offense to him, but he's got limitations on the defensive end.
Yeah, and I think we gotta mention Tristan Thompson's ability to do what he does. I mean, in the first half, he was one of the only players with multiple offensive rebounds. And, I mean, he was doing his job to a T and really kept the Cavs in it in the first half, especially in the second quarter. But looking at that lineup together was interesting to me, and I think it could work potentially. But Chris, I wanted to get your thoughts on the difficulty that J.B. Bickerstaff again has with a deeper lineup when players return. I mean, obviously, Marcus Morris Sr. is on a 10-day contract, and he's hoping to get that extended. It's a possibility that the Cavs wouldn't want to use him in the playoffs because he is eligible for that. But with Dean Wade and George Niang, and now you throw in Marcus Morris Sr. into the conversation, we've talked about the difficulty of the depth that this team has. And already we're talking about how J.B. Bickerstaff doesn't like playing with more than 10 players in a rotation. Now you throw another capable guy who has playoff experience. And we've also talked about the importance of playoff experience and having guys who have been in those moments. What do you think is going to happen if the Cavs decide to keep Marcus Morris Sr. on longer than his 10-day contract, especially when other guys return from injury?
Let's allow this to play itself out. Let's see how Marcus Morris Sr. does for the remainder of this 10-day. He's going to be here until March 27th, and then the Cavs are obviously going to make a decision. Are they going to give him a second 10-day? Are they going to give him a standard contract? Are they just going to let him walk in free agency? One performance does not a Cavs career make. One performance does not earn a guy a standard NBA contract. But it was a really, really good audition, and it kind of showed some things that the Cavs are lacking right now, given the fact that Evan Mobley and Dean Wade are both out simultaneously. When those guys are back, when the team is at full strength, I think it's just on Marcus to understand there is a specific hierarchy. I've got to stay ready. My role is probably going to fluctuate. I have to have a level of acceptance of that. And I think it helps that he showed tonight that he can go from basically the couch to the court and make an impact. So that would tell me that if he's out of the rotation for any extended period of time and JB just has to go to him because Dean Wade's not giving the Cavs what they need, because Evan Mobley's in foul trouble, or the Cavs don't love the too big lineup with Evan and Jarrett together, it gives me confidence that even if Morris were to go extended stretches without playing significant minutes, he's the kind of guy who, when his number is called, he understands the responsibility, he understands the task, and he can come through in those kinds of situations. Not everybody can do that, right? Some people are rhythm players. Sometimes it messes with players' confidence when they just don't get consistent playing time, when they don't know when their number is going to be called, when they don't know where their shots are going to be coming from, when they don't know if they're even going to be in the rotation. But it seems like Marcus is the kind of guy, and tonight highlighted it a little bit, that he can handle that kind of role. And I think his relationship with J.B. Bickerstaff, which goes back more than a decade, I think it helps that as well in terms of the communication, the understanding, and the trust between the two guys. So I just don't know. I don't know that it would be a problem for Morris, but it would also mean that these other guys are going to have to perform.
Yeah, and I think that is a big part of it. Like, when you don't perform, you get replaced, and that's something that we've seen.
If you have other options that are capable of taking those minutes and performing in those minutes, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I think my favorite part, you mentioned him coming off the couch and just getting in and getting minutes, but Marcus Morris looked confident shooting the ball. He put the ball on the floor a couple times, got into a fadeaway. I was like, hold on now. I don't know how much film I've watched on Marcus Morris Sr., but good Lord, he's getting into it. So it was just good to see, because obviously anybody who's listening to this podcast knows that I am a big confidence guy. And when confidence is applied in the game of basketball, it can lead to different outcomes for a particular player. And Marcus Morris Sr., who came off the couch and got 20 minutes tonight in his debut with the Cavs, was looking extremely confident with the ball. And I think that helped him, especially when you see that first shot go down.
I mean, he said it tonight. He wasn't trying to do anything outside of what he feels like he's capable of. He was just trying to be himself. He was trying to blend into the fabric of the team and do whatever it was that he could do to help the team win. And I think that's important. Understanding your role, understanding your strengths and your weaknesses, role acceptance, all of that kind of stuff is really, really important for a team that has playoff aspirations. And, you know, he's somebody who has been around a long time. He's played a lot of basketball. And there's a level of confidence and assurance that comes with that.
All right, Chris, if there's nothing else that you want to discuss about tonight's game, or maybe touch on about the Miami Heat game, but we can wait to get to that tomorrow.
No, I think we can wait for that one.
And y'all know the rules. When Chris says we're done, we are done. So that'll wrap up today's episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. But remember to become a Cavs insider and interact with Chris and me by subscribing to Subtext. Sign up for a 14-day free trial or visit cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word stop. It's easy, but we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around, because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from me and Chris. This isn't just our podcast, it's your podcast. And the only way to have your voice heard is through Subtext. Y'all be safe. We out.